Hi, Mackenzie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great. Amazing. Saw your movie, number one movie in America. It must feel pretty good to have that going for you.
Yeah, that was, I was not expecting that. It was a great surprise.
Really? It's a Hunger Games. What'd you think? It was a bomb or something?
No, but I've never done a franchise movie. So I think I just didn't have a full grasp of like the scope. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, 6 months working on this thing. I mean, it's like all your hard work. You finally get to see the fruits of your labor.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just, you know, especially if you're an actor for long enough, you kind of like train yourself to sort of curb your expectations, like, and that sort of thing. But it reached and like exceeded every one of my expectations, which was a really nice surprise.
Yeah. It wasn't. So were you kind of worried? Cause it is a little bit of a gamble because it's a prequel. So it's not the original stars, right? It's all mostly a new cast, basically.
Yeah, it is. I think I knew it was going to be a movie that I loved. But I think I was, you know, hopeful that it would be well received by the fans. I knew that the people who are fans of the book, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, would love it because, you know, Suzanne Collins is very careful about making sure that it's pretty faithful to the book. But for people who are more fans of the movies and have expectations, this one is just so different that I think I was not sure about how that would be received, but very well, it turns out.
Yeah, I saw this weekend and I think I've seen the first one and the third one. Uh-huh. Is it the fifth movie technically?
Yeah, technically, because that one of them's a two-parter, right?
Okay. So, I feel like this could have been a two-parter too. I feel like
debated
this is a
movie. Yeah, Francis like debated it, but I think he felt like the fans were a little bit disappointed by it being split in two like that. So he decided he wasn't going to do that again.
That's interesting. Cause I thought they would like that. Cause it's like, you get more of the stuff. Cause they, when they have to condense it down to, you know, 2 or 3 hour movie, don't they have to cut a lot of scenes out?
They do. I think it's one of those things where it just like depends who you talk to. But I think, Francis really wanted to find a way to like encompass the entirety of the book. And then, you know, obviously if Suzanne ends up writing more, then to be able to move on to that, if that happens.
Yeah. So talk about working on this. You did the stunt training, you did the martial arts, but you're actually afraid of heights.
Yes.
To be up high in a scene. So how do you talk yourself through that? Or do you have somebody like kind of coaching you through it?
Well, our stunt coordinator and choreographers were incredible people. That helped. And they had a lot of faith in me that I didn't even have in myself, to be completely honest. The first day I scaled that, the sort of mock, you know, archway that I chased Lamina up, in, you know, rehearsals, it was sort of like a scaffolding situation. And I could barely get off the ground. I had a panic attack, like clutching, like, this scaffolding. But I think that like, it's easier when you're acting. Cause like, you're like, well, my character's not afraid of heights. You know what I mean? And you trick yourself into it, that way.
But still, it's kind of like a biological response. Like I'm going to die. And it's like, you can't, it's hard to control that, isn't it?
It really is. But I think if you embrace the circumstance enough that you're like, either like I have to kill her so I can live. And like that in itself is life or death. Then it, you can kind of overrule. I mean, I still like tried to never look down, but you can kind of like override that.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing about acting and emotions and controlling it. I mean, you really do have to be able to control your emotions. Can you cry on cue as well? Is there a technique? I saw this technique where you go like this or something, and then you and that, does that really work?
There's a lot of techniques. I will say that I'm just one of those. I have anxiety disorder and I can just cry because I can cry. So like for me, it's easy access, but there are tricks, like you stare into a light for too long and burn, like, you know, the lights that you have on set. But usually I try not to use those. You want it to come from an authentic place, hopefully.
Yeah. So do you use that, your anxiety, that kind of channels you as an actress?
Yeah, it does. It, you know, what's funny is it actually was like the biggest like crippling thing in my career for a really long time. And now it's like my hidden like superpower that I can, my anxiety can make me embrace imaginary circumstances and also can help me generate emotions quicker. Cause on set, you kind of, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, go cry, you know? And like, you have like 5 seconds to do that. So yeah, I've now learned to harness it so I can use it to my advantage.
That's good. Yeah. Cause I had really bad anxiety in college. And I remember my dad was like, I was trying to explain to him and then I talked to him and obviously he had it too. I mean, I think every human has some level of anxiety, but his description of it was so great. He said it was like anxiety. That stuff's like rocket fuel. It can take you to the moon or can blow you up with a launch pad. Wow, so it's like, really if you can harness it somehow, it's like, I feel like it's really powerful. Cause have you ever met people too, that I feel like they have such low levels of anxiety, it's almost like they're just apathetic and then they just don't care at all.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I try to tell myself. I'm like, it's just that I care so much, you know, like to make myself feel better about it. But it's like, yeah, that's so true. You meet people who like don't have that thing. And it's kind of eerie almost, you know, when you meet someone like that, especially if you're someone who that's so much a part of your life.
Right. Yeah. You're like, oh, I wish I could just not care. That'd be amazing.
What is that like? Like, what do you do all day if you're not worrying about stuff? Like, let's get bored.
Let's just be happy. Like, what's that like?
What's that like? That sounds weird. I don't know if I like that.
Yeah. But it's fun working on these movies, right? I mean, this big budget. Like, talk about the catering. Is the catering like amazing on this movie?
So it depended where we were.
Oh.
Because obviously, like, I'm not gonna say where, but somewhere that we went, like there was less availability for like catering, especially for the size of a film set. It wasn't the kind of thing they had done before. So on those ones, it wasn't great, but there were a lot of places where it was awesome. Yeah.
So yeah, how does that work with the sets? Cause I mean, maybe this is a dumb question, but I couldn't tell, like, is the, when you're in the stadium or whatever, is that like a real stadium that they used, or is that entirely a set that they made, or is it CGI? I mean, it fooled me.
I mean, it's real, which I was excited about because you don't know. Sometimes they do CGI stuff and there's a lot of stuff CGI'd in this movie, but I think that Francis Lawrence and, you know, they really try as much as possible to use real sets and then like kind of fill in the blanks with CGI. But that's, yeah, that are the arena. That's a real place in Poland. And what they did CGI in is like some of the Panem stuff that you see, not the flags, those were there, but I think a few details on the chairs were CGI'd in, you know, because you need to age it properly and things like that. And then obviously when they blow up the roof.
Okay. Yeah. Cause that's what I was going to say. Like, they didn't really blow up an entire stadium.
No, but what they did do that is wild is, so not all of it, but part of the tunnel stuff, they did make a hole in the floor that we jumped through. I jumped through it too. It didn't make it into the movie, but like, you know, when Lucy like runs and she jumps and she goes, so they made a hole in the floor and we were in the actual, like, I don't know if you'd call it tunnels, but like, you know, this area, this floor that was underneath the arena.
And then do they fill it up when they leave, or they left it like that?
No, they fixed it, I think. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
But you could go visit this stadium you said Poland?
Yeah. You can go visit in Poland. They have a lot of events there. I'm not really sure exactly what, but they have, I think, sporting events, all kinds of stuff.
Okay.
Sometimes, yeah.
That'd be cool. So you talk about the CGI. I found this interesting that you said the snakes, obviously some of the snake parts are CGI, but it wasn't like they told you what to do. You could do whatever you want with the performance and then they would add the snake in later. So you could pretend the snake was here or there and then they would add it later.
Yeah, exactly. They would add it later, which means that every single actor that you're looking at has made really specific choices about how they're reacting to the bites, whether it's the poison that's like slowing them down first, or whether they're reacting to each individual bite, or like in Dimmy's case, who plays Reaper, whether you're just like standing there still as a rock and letting it overtake you. Like, all of those were choices that they made. And then, you know, you fill in the blanks afterwards.
Yeah. And then, so talk about working with the star, Rachel, how do you say it? Zegler. Yeah. I mean, she's so amazing. She's such a great actress, so talented singer, and just so beautiful. Like, do you ever get distracted when you're like working with her and you're supposed to like hate her and you're just like,
oh my God,
lost in your eyes.
So like, much. So much. And Kel talked about this all the time on set. Kel Bruchheit, who plays, you know, one of the members of my pack, he and I like were looking at her on set one day and we're like, it's like a real live Disney character just like walked out. Like, Kel was like, she's so beautiful. It looks unreal. But I will say that, like, on top of that, she's extremely intelligent and such a nice person.
That's awesome. I love to hear that kind of stuff. I don't want to spoil the movie, but I think you have the best line in the whole movie. The last line that you speak, your character speaks, is so powerful. It's like this meaning of life, reflection, philosophical thing. I was like, oh, that is such a cool line. And you got it.
I was really happy about that because in the original script, even though I already loved Coral, that scene wasn't there. So it was added while I was on set. And I knew when they added that line that like my character now had this like fully fleshed out arc, that there was going to be this like mirror with Kato's character. Yeah, I think it's a beautiful moment.
That's so cool. And I mean, this movie's making, it's already over 100 million. Did you get a flat rate or did you just say like, give me like, I don't, what do they call it? A point or a half of a point or quarter point or how does that work?
Oh, I can't really talk about that, unfortunately, but
oh, really?
Yeah. NDAs.
Oh, really? They keep it. Yeah. Oh, is that part of the strike thing too? Like they don't want people to know the actresses to talk about that kind of stuff.
No, I can talk about it, I guess. It's like, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Stuff. Yeah. I don't want to get you in trouble.
No, you're good. Well,
yeah. So tell me about, or tell my audience about this. This is so cool. Because your dad lives in France, so he doesn't get to see a lot of your work, but he got to see this movie and he called you crying. That's so cool.
You really did your research. Wow. He did. My dad called me crying. My dad, does not cry all the time. It was pretty cool. Cause it was his first time. Like he lives in the middle of nowhere. Like my dad lives in a beet field, literally in France. And so he went all the way to the nearest like big town and with his partner and, she and him like went to go see this movie. And that was his first time like seeing me on a big screen.
Yeah. And you have a big role. Cause like, I know when my friend said, hey, do you want to have this actress on? I was like, he said that you were in the Hunger Games. And I was like, I don't know. Like, is she have like a two lines or like, I mean, you're like a major character in this movie. So it's a huge thing for your career, right?
It is. Yeah. I didn't really tell anyone what my role size was. Cause you kind of don't know till you see it, right? Till it's edited and you know, you don't want to get your hopes up, but, this is a big deal for me. I'm not gonna lie.
Do a lot of directors and producers start calling after they see this now because of the exposure you're getting?
I mean, right now we're still like post strike. So things are really slow. So I actually haven't really seen a huge change in like, I don't know how much I'm getting called in or like things like that. I hope that happens. It just kind of depends like who goes to see this movie. I hope a lot of people do. I think it's, you know, even if you weren't like a huge fan of Hunger Games beforehand, I really think there's something in this for everyone. And it's such like a beautiful character study.
Yeah. I'm usually not a fan of like the big blockbusters. I don't watch them as much because there's just so many, it's hard to keep up, but this is a good one. This is it's a good story. It keeps you engaged. It's long. Like I said, I feel like it could be two movies, but it keeps you going it keeps you interested the entire time. You're like, you don't really know what's going to happen next.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think it's funny because like you get towards the end of the arena stuff and I think people think maybe it's the end of the movie, but then you're like, but it hasn't been that long yet. So like, what's going to happen now? It sort of keeps you on your toes the entire time, which is nice.
And I'm assuming there's going to be a sequel to this.
I don't know. I think that they kind of purposely left it closed and open-ended so that if basically Lionsgate has said like they're not going to make Hunger Games movies unless she writes books. They really like respect, her and her work. And so unless she writes a book, they're not going to create just a sequel to create one. So, and Susanna said that she's only going to write another book if she feels like she really has something to say. So it really just depends on whether she feels like there's more to develop there or not.
Oh, okay. So it's caught up with the books, the movies. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. What about this other movie that you did? I haven't seen this one yet because it just looks so freaky to me. The Creator. Do you have a pretty big role in that one?
No, it's a very small role. I did I had like four scenes, but I think like most of it got cut. So now it's like a pretty small part. But it was cool because like all my stuff was with John David Washington. So I got to spend a lot of time with him. He's such a sweet guy.
He's the star of that one, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. And then tell me about this new one that I just saw. I've only seen the trailer. It's called All's Well in New York. And you play like a pregnant woman.
Yeah. Not to give too much away, but I play a girl who's basically giving up her baby for adoption on Craigslist, I think it is. It's a fun movie. It's like an independent film. It's got a lot of stars in it, you know, like Elizabeth Rodriguez from Orange is the New Black, you know, Bobby Cannavale, Michael Rispoli, Max Casella, and I could go on and on and on because all these guys are friends. So they got together to make this movie. And I have a pretty important role in that one. And I think the release is going to be around 2024. Yeah.
Okay. And then you have other projects that are coming out that you've already completed?
No, that's it. The creator and then All's Well in New York. And that's it for me for right now. The strike has really I think forced a lot of people to take some time off work. So we'll be all caught up by the time All's Well comes out.
Okay. What about the pilot that you wrote, The Third Culture with your friends?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm still writing that. We're still working on it. And I also wrote a pilot of my own, that I think my next big goal is to get one of these pilots, produced and be able to, act in it as well.
That's cool. Okay. And then like, what's other things that you've done? I mean, you've worked with Maggie Gyllenhaal and, Kate Winslet. Kate Winslet kind of mentored you a little bit. Like, what did you learn working with her?
She did. She, like, one of the pieces of advice that she gave me on set, our first day on set, we were at a rehearsal and we pulled up and we both had like the exact same like binder, like full of like sticky notes and all this stuff. One of the pieces of advice that she gave me was just never stop doing the work. Like, don't ever take it for granted. Don't ever cut corners, like keep doing the work because the work is what it's all about. I take that with me every time I step onto a set. I think of her now.
And what's in those binders with this? Is this like you're developing your character, like things that the character would do? And
yeah, like notes and backstory and all these other things. She's so talented, but she also works incredibly hard. And this was her first time producing, and she really showed up as a leader on set. She was amazing at it.
And you guys ad-libbed the scene. You thought she might actually punch you during that scene?
Yeah, when we were doing the scene at like the police station, I think it is, where like my character Brianna sort of starts mouthing off about her son who passed away. The end of that scene is like pretty much improvised. Yeah,
it must be different. It's like when you watch sports and you watch football. It's different watching on TV and like playing it, or like even if you're front row in a sporting event, you could hear the sounds and things. It must be different to have like Kate Winslet like yelling at you in your face than just watching it on TV.
Yeah, it's weird. There's definitely a couple moments where you're like, you kind of accidentally step out of character because you're like, Kate Winslet is yelling at me right now. That's so cool.
Right?
Yeah. It is. It's wild. And it's, you know, what's strange is like when you feel like you've known somebody for a long time because you've been following their work, but you don't know them, you know, and that's always like an interesting sort of dynamic to like adjust to that. Cause I was a huge fan of hers. And luckily I was able to tell her on the last day on set, that her movie Eternal Sunshine is what made me want to be an actor.
Oh, that's okay. I knew that you liked that. I didn't know that was the one that made you want to be an actor. That is a great movie. I love it.
Such a good movie.
And is that the same director that does Being John Malkovich or the writer or something like that, right?
Charlie Kaufman. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of my goals is to work with him. I love all of his stuff. John Malkovich is, Being John Malkovich, sorry, is also, that's one of my like top five favorite movies.
Yeah. It's so creative. You know, it's like you see a lot of movies that are very, that follow this similar formula. And then you see a movie like Being John Malkovich or Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. You're just like, hi, but it keeps you intrigued. You're not like, it's not just weird to be weird. I feel like it weaves the story into it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, it's so rare to see movies like that. I think like the next time that I remember seeing something was Everything Everywhere All at Once, where I was like, this is kind of, you know, like weird, but it all ties together and it all makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And so, and I think you said another one of your goals to work with Frances McDormand. I love her. I mean, I've been a fan of her since Fargo. I thought she was so good in that movie. And then the Three Billboards, and she's done so much stuff. I mean, how do you get to work with someone like that? Is it just, you hope that an offer comes your way, or is there a way to reach out to try to get a project with her?
No, I usually just like hope and keep putting it out into the universe. That's worked really well for me so far. So I've gotten to work with a lot of people who I admire. And so I'm just going to trust that it's going to happen one day.
Yeah. You're into a lot of that kind of like motivation and habits. And what was the book that you read? Something Habits. What was it called? I Slight Edge book. It was about helping you get good habits. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's ironic because I think in my day-to-day life, I have like terrible habits. Like I'm not very, you know, like I'm not very clean. Like I'm kind of a messy person, you know, I'm an artist, so it's a little bit whatever. But I do think like one of the most important things you can do is like how you talk to yourself in your own head. And I think that gets neglected a lot because even though I'm not into like super spiritual stuff, I just think it's logical that, you know, the way you talk to yourself and think about yourself is going to directly affect your actions and what you bring into your life.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I don't know if you're a fan of David Goggins, but I just love that guy. I mean, I don't want to be him because I think he's crazy, but I just think I need to be a little bit more David Goggins because he's just so motivating. And so I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No, I don't know who that is. David Goggins.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's just such a motivating guy. And there's a podcast I follow too called The Mindset Mentor. And it's a lot of the kind of thinking like questions like, why do I feel this way? Why do I think this thing? And he kind of explains it and breaks it down. I've learned a lot. Just you read in those kinds of books or podcasts and things, you can really start to understand when you have anxiety or depression or any sort of things like that, like, you know, obsessive thoughts and things like that. You could start to go down that rabbit hole and then you start to kind of piece it together. It's kind of nice to have all those resources, the time that we live in now with YouTube and all this.
Yeah, there's also an amazing podcast called, I don't know if I can curse on here, but it's called Unfuck Your Brain.
I never heard of it.
It's really good. She kind of has like a very like practical, pragmatic approach to like rewiring the way you think. And I respond well to that because I'm not very hippy dippy. Like I'm not really into all the spiritual stuff, but she really breaks it down in a way that's like based in science where you're like, all right, this makes sense. And yeah.
I agree. I'm the same. I'm not very, I don't have to get the hippy dippy, like the crystals and things. I just want to know like what's scientific or just whatever works, you know? So, but usually the science-based stuff makes more sense to me. But do you think too, there's a book called, I forget what it's called. I had it around here somewhere. I forget the name of it, but it's all about like how you learn from failure. Do you feel like that's a big part of your success too? Obviously you've had a lot of success, but what about the failures that you have? I know one of the things is so interesting. You auditioned for Blue's Clues. That's fascinating. We didn't get it.
I can't believe you know that. Yeah, I did. I got really close to being the Blue's Clues girl. And every time I walk onto a set now, I think about that and I just think, wow, thank God. I got really sidetracked in my career. So I teach and I always tell my students, like, what qualifies me to teach you is not the movies I've been in, but it's how I have failed like so much over and over and over again. I've done some insane stuff in auditions, you know, it's like starting out, you do weird stuff. One time I exited my audition into a closet and then I had to sit in the closet and decide whether I should like come back out or like, it was so bad.
Like you thought that was the exit door, but it was,
I thought it was the exit. I got like, I did a bad audition and I was like in my head. Well, the other thing that I didn't mention is, okay, you have to like, I was very young. I was a very young actor. Okay. And I decided that my character wears glasses, which is like a silly thing to choose, especially because I don't wear glasses. So I wore glasses and I couldn't see anything. And that's why I went into the closet.
Oh, this is great. See, but this is the stuff. This is how you learn and you grow, is that you have to like fail big. I mean, I think that's like what the Denzel Washington speech or whatever. Like, oh, it's so great.
Yeah. Now it's so funny because now when I fail, like even though it hurts, obviously, I just like view it as it means I'm getting closer. Like every time you fail, you're getting closer to getting it right. And I think that's not told to actors enough, that they're supposed to mess up. Like you can go to acting school and do all the things and you're still going to have bad auditions. You're still going to say the wrong thing on set and you just learn from it and you move on.
Like what is the percentage of roles that you land versus how many you audition for?
Like very small, like very, very small. I mean, obviously the bigger resume you have, like then it starts to get a little bit easier. just because people are familiar with your work, so they don't need to like review as many tapes. But yeah, it's a very small portion.
Like 1% or 5% or?
I'd say closer to 1%, maybe over 5, something like that.
So hopefully this Hunger Games gets you a little bit over that hump then.
Yeah, every project, it gets a little bit better. You know, every single project that I do, it gets a little bit smoother, I would say.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, back to Frances McDormand and Fargo. I remember when that movie came out and the other star, William H. Macy, was saying that he auditioned for every role he ever got up until that movie. Then he's like, I don't have to audition anymore. People just come to me with offers. I'm like, oh, that must be so nice.
That's great. I don't know. I know from even like actors who it might surprise you who still, that's not the case. And you think it might be, but they still have to audition, or at least they might go to like the final round directly because people are like, okay, we've seen your work, but they still have to screen test and chemistry read and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially for certain directors, I'm sure they don't just hand you stuff. There's probably certain people that want to test you out. Yeah, that's really, yeah. So, I mean, your goal is to you want to get a starring role on a TV show, right?
I don't know what my goal is anymore. It was for a long time. And then I did this. And I think that also for a long time, a starring role on a TV show was job stability for me. I was like, if I'm a series regular, but I think that was because I was so afraid that like I couldn't book things. And I think I've grown to like have a little bit more faith in myself where now I'm like, I'm going to book things. It's just more creative. Like, what do I want to book? Like, what's the ideal outcome? Maybe I want to be part of like lots of different types of movies. And maybe it depends on the role. Obviously, I'm not saying no, but like, maybe I don't want to be locked down on a TV show for 4 years, you know? This movie has definitely, I think partially the stunt training, like realized that I was physically capable of so much more than I thought I was. Like it worked on me the inside out, where now I like think of myself very differently and I have a lot more, I don't know, I'm more playful with it, I guess.
Interesting. That is I do definitely think, back to the scientific stuff, I think there's a definitely mind body connection. Yeah. And that can make, at least for me, I know exercise makes a huge difference in my mindset.
Yeah. I was like a heavily bullied kid and, you know, was really bad at sports. I have like feet and knee problems that are pretty severe for like somebody, for like a healthy-ish person my age. And so like having to do like martial arts and run around and climb things, like I was really afraid I wasn't going to be able to do it. So that was kind of a turning point for me, honestly.
So you were bullied for the physical issues or?
No, that came a little bit later. No, sorry. I was kind of a dork and not very athletic and, you know, like the weird queer kid. Like, so I don't know. I didn't view myself as somebody who could be like in an action movie. And now that I've done this, I'm like, maybe there's a lot more I can do than I thought, you know?
That's awesome. That's so inspiring. I love to hear that kind of stuff. That's great.
Yeah, it's been a journey. I have to say this movie has done like wonders for the way I think of myself, just because the fans have been so lovely.
Oh, yeah, because it's worldwide, right? So how do fans reach out to you? Do you get Instagram messages or like, do you get physical mail or email or how do they?
I don't get physical mail, which I like it that way. I get a lot of DMs, no emails. That's not, my email address isn't really public, but I get a lot of DMs. I try to respond to as many as I can because I feel like if people reach out saying nice things, I want them to know that like I appreciate them and that I've been in their shoes where like I've watched someone and been like, oh, I want to do that one day, you know?
So there's a lot of girls that want to be actors themselves that are inspired by your performance?
Honestly, I'll say that the people who've reached out to me the most who have really touched me is like the queer community. I get like messages every single day from people saying that like being able to see themselves represented like means a lot to them. And I think it would have meant a lot to me growing up. So that's what I want to do. And if I'm doing that even for like 4 people, it makes me really happy.
Because you knew from a young age that you were lesbian?
No, not at all. No, I grew up pretty religious and it took me a really long time to like come to terms with who I was. Yeah. And it's part of the reason I think I struggled as an actor for so long because I wasn't being honest, you know, with myself.
Oh, interesting. Well, I was going to ask you this then. What do you think? Cause Hunter Schafer, is that how I say it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct.
She's in this movie too. And there's the trans community is mad at Jimmy Fallon because she went on Jimmy Fallon And Jimmy Fallon called her Bud, I think at least once or twice. They were kind of joking around. And I don't think she got offended, but maybe she didn't notice. But there's all this huge uproar. Like, well, what are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, you know, I don't really know. I don't think I know enough about the situation to have like a fully formed opinion on that, actually.
Because it is kind of a tough thing. I don't think, I mean, there's like the intent, right? Like, I don't think Jimmy Fallon was trying to be vicious or mean or anything, but it is like, it's a mistake. So like, does he need to apologize? Like, I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been silent so far.
That's more of a question for Hunter. I don't know if I can aptly like respond in her place, especially since I actually haven't seen it. So I don't know.
Have you seen her work on Euphoria? Have you watched that show at all?
No, I have seen clips, so I know she's incredible. For personal reasons, like involving sensitivity to certain subject matter, I can't watch Euphoria. But I know she's incredible in it because my sister is like a huge fan and tells me all about how amazing she is on that show. So
yeah, I've seen every episode. It's intense, the whole show. I mean, I would not let, if I had kids, I wouldn't let my kids watch it till they're like 30 or something. It's like, I mean, but because it's so,
oh, yeah,
the drugs and stuff. And then I think one of the actors who played kind of a drug dealer, maybe even in the show, I think he died recently. It's really sad. It's like, oh man.
Yeah. I heard about that. That's so sad, man. Yeah. She's so talented. She's an incredible actress and she's such a kind person. And she just has like, she has like an infectious personality. She's as amazing as you would like hope she is.
Wow. Is there any shows that, that you would want to, if you may, either, if not a starring role, maybe a guest starring role, or a show that you'd want to jump on for a couple episodes?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Oh yeah. I already have an answer for this. Have you seen Our Flag Means Death?
No, I haven't even heard of it.
Okay. Watch it. It's hilarious. It's, I think it's a British show. Like, I don't know who it's made by, but Taika Waititi is in it and it's incredible. And, yeah, I would kill to be on that show just for even like 5 seconds.
Oh, okay. I'll have to definitely check that. I love the Brits come up with some of the best, like, I don't know what it is about
comedy,
the humor.
Man.
It's so different that it, like, it really is unexpected. I think that's the thing, that the key to humor is like to have it be unexpected. What's the show? I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's a huge show in England where the person like throws up, like there's multiple episodes where the person just projectile vomits. It's like so funny.
I don't know. Is it? I don't know. What show is that?
I'll have to send it to you. It's so, I had one of the actresses from that was like in one episode when she was a little girl. And I watched this episode and I was like, this show is hilarious. And I asked my buddy that lives over there. I was like, have you heard of the show? He's like, oh, this show's like the number one show.
Really?
It's crazy. I forget the name of it. But so this, the one that you're talking about is called This Flag Means Death.
It's called Our Flag Means Death. It's about pirates.
Oh, okay. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Well, great.
It's so
well, funny. Hunger Games is out now and All's Well in New York is coming out in 2024. Anything else you want to promote?
I don't think so right now. Go see All's Well in New York when it comes out. And be on the lookout for my TV show, hopefully, when it gets made.
Yeah, that's different than, you're saying you wrote your own. That's different than the Third Culture one.
We're also working on that one. But yeah, I have my own pilot that I'm working on separately. But I also love Third Culture, and I think it's such a good project. I think it'll resonate with a lot of people who, anybody really who's grown up with different cultures in their household, which I think is most people at this point, have a little bit of like exposure to different things, you know?
Right, absolutely. Cool. Well, you have to come back and promote that when you...
Absolutely.
Doing,
yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Mackenzie.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to the full podcast episode. Please help support our guests by following them on social media and purchasing their products, whether it be a book, album, film, or other thing. And if you have a few extra dollars, please consider donating it to their favorite charity. If you want to support the show, you can like, share, and comment on this episode on social media and YouTube. And if you want to go the extra mile, you can give us a rating or review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. Finally, make sure you're subscribed to the show on YouTube for the video versions and other exclusive content. We appreciate your support. Have a great rest of your day and shoot for the moon.